Hey everyone, welcome to another epidose of Serotonin. I'm your host, Korean Thomas. My mind is usually all over the place, thinking about new ideas, family, chores, scheduling time to meet new people. But with so many different modes of communication and processing information, it can sometimes be really hard to describe how I'm feeling to someone. My guest today poses that what if we could use objective tools like math and science to describe our emotions? His name is Clement Decroix. He's a prolific inventor and the author of The Idea Space. I met Clement not too long ago. We both work in tech and we both are fascinated by mindfulness and how to make it feel more real. Clement has led wellness events for thousands of participants across more than 40 countries on topics of mindfulness, sleep, exercise, and nutrition. He's also worked at big tech firms like IBM, where he submitted more than 130 patent disclosures, more than 12 of which have been issued. In this epidose of Serotonin, I sit down on an IG Live with Clement to break down his concept of the idea space. To him, the idea space provides the beginnings of a digestible structure for the mind that is congruent with modern physics and applicable to all humans. In his book, he guides readers to view their own thoughts, emotions, sensations, and perceptions as objectively as they would view anything in space-time, and thereby unlocking the inner creative power of the mind. Throughout the epidose, we talk about the similarities of math and science with the mind and consciousness, we talk about cultural notions of mindfulness, and we also chat about the role the idea space would play in building a collective consciousness in society. So, without further ado, here's me and Clement.
We saw me just like fidgeting with the camera and everything. I was like, just trying to narrate all the technical difficulties. How's it going, Clement?
Dude, living life. How about yourself?
I'm good. Yeah, just trying to get back into routine. I know I told you about my trip to Morocco recently, which was a lot of fun. So but getting back into the U.S. is always such an adjustment, and especially. When you're going back to remote work, it's like, I don't want to talk to anyone.
How was Morocco? What'd you end up doing there?
It was a lot of fun. We spent some time with my family, checked out cities like Fez, Casablanca, Marrakech, and it's a beautiful place to be in.
Yeah, my dad was actually born in Morocco. He was born in Tangier, like all the way up north.
Oh.
So got some roots
there. Okay. Nice. Yeah, it seems like you're very like globally aware and very much like in tune with different cultures too. That's pretty cool. I think the last time I saw on your page actually that you were born in Belgium.
Yep. Yeah, born in Belgium. Then I moved to moved to Spain when I was 3 or 4.
Wow.
And then I moved to the United States when I was 6, which was awful because I didn't speak English and it was just. Oh, this is spooky and very scary as a child.
I had no idea. Why was your family like, were you in the military?
Yeah, good question. So my dad worked at a company called Air Products, and they make industrial gases, and they're headquartered in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So they had an office in Spain, so that's why we moved to Barcelona, and then that's why we ended up moving to Allentown afterwards.
Wow. How often do you and your family travel, or how often do you travel? That seems like you've been all over.
Yeah, great question. So I try to travel once a year to somewhere, whether it's like a ski trip out west. I'm actually going to Whistler on Saturday, which I'm very excited to go skiing. And then I was out in South Korea a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and that was just beautiful. That was a fun area to be in.
That's incredible. Yeah, and I know a lot of the things that you we'll have a chance to like dive deeper into why we're doing this IG Live and getting to learn a little bit more about idea space, which I think like a lot of people will find exciting, especially after this podcast is produced. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, like who you are, especially for people that don't know you. I know we got to connect just through work. We both work at IBM, and after I talked to a few of my coaches and career people, like they connected me with you, and it seems like you, I'm very much interested in mindfulness and wellness, and I love hearing more about how you got into this and what your background is.
Yeah, great question. So like I said, moved to Allentown when I was around 6 years old, went to a super small school that only had 20 people in it. And so you kind of know everyone in the school, did that up until eighth grade, then went to high school. And then there was like 600, 700 people in my grade. So that was a nice little step up. And then decided to go to Penn State, and that was another 10,000 people per grade. So just exponentially going up. Went to go work at IBM afterwards, similar trajectory that you're doing right now. And then after just working there for 3 years, kind of felt like I needed a break, just to kind of try my own thing and pursue my own interests. And so that's what the past 2 years have been, really. Started getting into kind of meditation and mindfulness about 5 years ago, but I did it as a child because I struggled to fall asleep. So my parents would do some sort of body scans to help me sleep. And then just got more and more into it. I love science and physics as well. So yeah. I tried to marry the two into a book, and that's kind of how the idea space came about. And that's awesome to hear that you're into wellness and mindfulness. We talked about this already, but I feel like it's a great thing to be into, just kind of self-improvement and taking the time to reflect inward and to try to better yourself.
Yeah, I feel like when you start learning about mindfulness and wellness, like I myself am not an expert on meditation. I'm not like a yogi. I do love practicing both of those things. But I feel like when you do start learning more about mindfulness and wellness, it's probably for a reason. And like you said, you started because you couldn't fall asleep. How did your parents introduce mindfulness to you? Like, how was the whole concept of mindfulness first introduced to you?
So I don't think it was introduced to me formally. It was more so that body scan meditation, right? So just, all right, being aware of your feet and then just slowly moving up your body until all the spooky, scary thoughts of... So when I was a kid, the scariest movie I ever saw was 101 Dalmatians, because I thought the robber from that movie were going to come rob my house. I was terrified for no reason. So it was a good way to kind of escape those thought patterns and just kind of tune into the body and explore it that way. And then when I got older, I started listening to a lot of Sam Harris, who kind of formalized it in a way for me. And it was nice because he does a lot of different types of practices, whether it's Zen, the headless way, the spectrum of awareness, whatever it may be. And I thought that was a really interesting way of getting into it. And then you kind of build your own practice. And I think mindfulness is different for everybody, depending on who you ask. So I think it's important to test it out yourself. Do your own thing and kind of figure out what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah, totally. And so I guess what was like some of the first, so you said you started off doing body scans and as a child, and then you started, you know, learning a little bit more about it, of course. And you then delved into the world of tech. How did it come back to you, I guess, when you started after your whole experiences? Let's first dive deeper into like what you did in tech. Like what did that look like? I know you've done a lot of patenting work, right?
Yeah. So when I started IBM, did consulting similar to you, federal consulting, did that for a year. And then when I was doing it, my friend's brother worked at IBM and he hit me up and said, "Hey, would you be interested in doing patents?" And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds like so much fun." So, got paired up with him, and then got paired up with these two other people at IBM that are just the most prolific inventors you'll ever meet. For instance, the one guy submitted 350 patents in one year, which is like a patent a day, which is just like madness. Yeah. So learning from those two people really just helped me become a prolific patent inventor in my own right, just following what they did, making sure that the flow and structure was good, that they weren't throwaway patents, that they had some utility to them, right?
Right.
And IBM is really nice because they streamline that process for you, because up until this year, it was like 29 years in a row, they were the number one patent producer in the world. Mm. So they just make the process easy for you, and they want to get those patents out. But it seems as if they're shifting away a little bit towards that. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the coming years.
Yeah, no, I myself am interested. And it clearly is like, just based on what you just discussed, it clearly shows that you're obviously an inventor. You know what the invention process looks like. You question things that go on in the world. You question, like, how things work, and you're naturally curious. Why, like, what kind of was the process, or I guess was, like, the pivotal point when, you know, you've done the patent works, you know what it's like to invent something and, you know, go through that invention process. What kind of sparked the movement back into consciousness and mindfulness?
Yeah, so after I finished, so I was working on a project where I drove the sales presentation of this $10 billion cloud deal. And I did that, and I just worked really hard just for like 4 or 5 months straight every single day. I think the only day I took off was Thanksgiving, and just grinded. So I just was burnt out after that. So decided to go on sabbatical, and there's someone I listen to whose name is Naval Ravikant, who's the founder of AngelList. And he's an inspirational guru, and he said a lot of good things, including that it's important to do something that'll make you money while you sleep so that you can free your time. So I wasn't the best coder, but I read a lot. So I decided, hey, maybe I can write a book. So when I started writing the book, I decided to write on things that had withstood the test of time. And that included math, physics, and history. And it created this common thread of, okay, what is the intersection of all those things? And it just came out to be the idea space, which was kind of a mental model and a way to describe consciousness using mathematics and a system and framework that's congruent with modern physics. So it was just very serendipitous. It just kind of like came out of the blue. I was writing, it's like, okay, this is what I have.
That's crazy. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of people don't really see the direct, it's really hard to make a direct connection between the physical world and then the mental world, especially since, you know, mental health and wellness itself is so subjective, and it's hard to kind of put a picture to it when it's all in your head. What was that process? I guess, like, how did you start making those connections? I guess, what were some of the biggest connections that kind of like stood out to you when you were going through the process of writing this book of the idea space? Like, what were some of the key ideas that kind of led to the idea space, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you kind of said it where you're talking about how did you picture it? And for me, it was all about making pictures. And so I have this little saying where if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then an idea is worth 1,000 pictures. So I wrote an outline, and when I got to writing, I wrote it front to back. And wherever I thought I needed a picture, I went into PowerPoint and I made pictures. And so I made like 1,000 pictures, I think, overall. So the first draft of the book was 700 pages, and now it's like 233 pages with 233 pictures. So I think a big part was just taking the story wherever it went, right? Not trying to rush ahead into the next thing and just kind of writing up until a point where I was like, okay, that's enough writing. Yeah. And then trimming it back. And there's a good kind of moral where the true writing doesn't begin until you start editing.
Yeah.
So it was pretty demoralizing to have to do all this work and then have to start from zero. But that's kind of how you build things, right? You iterate to completion. You build once, iterate until you have your final product. And then once you iterate on one thing very well, then you could just sell it. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
That's awesome. That's so cool that you kind of like drafted something into idea, into an actual, like, I know you the book is one thing, but you actually manifested it into kind of explaining this concept. So I kind of want to, yeah, take it back a bit and just kind of understand, if you could explain idea space to someone based off this book, like what, and first off, I love the illustrations, by the way, because like it looks so cool when I read through it, and I'm just like, wow, that's kind of how I picture wellness and mindfulness as like this. It feels like you're stepping into a whole different universe. Like, what is the idea space and how you envisioned it?
Yeah, great question. So when I started writing it, I didn't really understand what it was until I got to the end of the first draft and it all came together. So there's different ways to explain it. On like the most technical level, the idea of space is an exact solution to Einstein's field equation. And so it's a new metric for general relativity. And it's the trivial solution in the sense that it's zero is the solution. So it's like, yeah, on a more kind of on a larger scale, it's kind of similar to what I said, where it's a way of describing your mind. So your idea space consists of your thoughts, emotions, sensations, perceptions, and the null set. The null set is just emptiness. So if you imagine a table and you some values are missing, so let's say you have a table describing apples and you have red, yellow, and then blank. That blank is just the empty set. And so a good little thought experiment you can do to find your idea space is to hold something in your hand. So, for example, I'm holding a pencil, right?
Yeah.
So then clearly you can see it. You can measure it. Now, if you close your eyes and you picture in your head what you're holding in your hand, you see a mental image of a pencil, or at least I do.
Yeah.
And then the question becomes, can anybody else see the mental image in your mind? And the answer is no, and that's because your idea space, so all your thoughts, emotions, sensations, and perceptions, has zero measure. And because it has zero measure, it looks like nothing to the outside world. So your idea space is are those elements, and then you throw some mathematical properties to it, and then you develop a common an approximation for the mind so that we can discuss it using very non-charged words or non- But it's just very objective, right? That's like the goal of the idea space, to view all your thoughts and emotions as objectively as you would view any other object in space-time.
I think that's like so incredible, because right now it's like, well, like we talked about before, there's no way to kind of measure up other than like, I know there's like mood tracking apps. There's ways to kind of track your behavior over time. There's journaling and things like that, but something as objective as science, where there's like a method, you can test the hypothesis and you can measure the results of those experiments, it's not something that's so easily done with the mental space. So I guess are there some like pretty common physics concepts that you've come across while writing this book that you can kind of tie back into explaining mindfulness or getting back to consciousness?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones is the idea that I can't see what you're thinking and you can't see what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And just because it looks like there's nothing there doesn't mean there is nothing there, right? And I think one of the keys of mindfulness is being present and aware of the arising of thoughts, being present and aware as thoughts pass, and then being present and aware as the arising and passing of thoughts altogether. Because a lot of times you'll find yourself just mind wandering or just thinking about random things, and you're not looking. Right. And when you're not looking, it looks like there's nothing there, but there's something there, but you're just not looking, whatever you are. And so mindfulness is the ability to kind of look past the veil of illusion, right? And kind of see it for what it is. And really just hone the light of awareness onto whatever it is you want to see that's just hidden from everybody else.
Totally, because it's all in your head. But when you were writing this book, I know have there been like kind of specific examples in your life where you kind of applied the concept of the idea space in real life?
Yeah, I think a big one is just understanding that no one sees what I'm thinking, and that really helps for communication and just drawing things out. Or one of the big ones for me is stating the obvious, just because what may be obvious to you is not obvious to someone else. And a prime example of this is when we were working at IBM for that large cloud deal I was mentioning. It was for the NSA, so America, right? And we had to do this cloud test, and we did it in Sydney, Australia at first. And we were just doing it up until like 2 weeks before. And then we realized that maybe we shouldn't do the test for the NSA in Sydney, Australia. So then we had to move over to a cloud base in the United States. And in my mind, the first time we started, I said, maybe we should do this in America, but I just didn't say it because like it's so obvious. I just didn't say it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was a really big lesson of just understanding that state the obvious, because if the obvious is never stated, then it ceases to be obvious. And I think that's pretty important.
But That's actually so interesting, because one thing that I've noticed, especially when it comes to trusting your intuition, and I think that was my biggest takeaway from like some of the concepts that I understood from the book, and also playing with the mindfulness cards that we'll get into in a bit, is that, yeah, there is like this intuitive understanding between two people. So some of the things, like you said, the things that I can see in my head may not be the same thing that you see in your head, but I think some of the like the understanding of what you're talking about, you can express that. Like you said, you expressed it better through pictures. And when I see it displayed in a picture, I completely understand, oh, so that's how you're mapping mood, or that's how you're mapping consciousness. How you kind of like been able to illustrate or communicate stuff that's going on in your life or in your mind space to other people day to day?
Yeah, I think like the pictures is huge. And then I think there's a particular, so in math, and when you have a group or a set of elements, there's one thing called the identity. So for example, let's say you have a group of the like regular numbers, and then you have multiplication as your parameter, then the identity of that is one. Anything times one will be itself. So for, in my mind, in the idea space, the identity relates to a koan, and that's kind of pulling from the Zen tradition. And a koan in Zen is Japanese for public case. And it's really an example of a short story where you can achieve intuitive and enlightenment in like a snap. In terms of the idea space, the koan is a perfect transfer of an idea from one person to the other. You're transferring the identity of an idea to the other. So, for example, have you ever just been walking around, just having a good day, kind of thinking about things, and then you come across something and you're just like, snap, like that captured exactly what I was thinking, whether it's a quote by someone, a picture or a song, and it just really hits you in all the mood and you just feel great. So that's a koan. That's like a moment of just like pure bliss and a perfect transfer of information that captures an idea space. So a specific example would be on the topic of impermanence, right? This idea that we're in a perpetual state of motion, whether in the universe, this plays out as dark energy, which is the constant expansion of space at any point in time. And a really good way of understanding this is, no man steps into the same river twice, for it is not the same river, and he is not the same man, right? And this is your idea that your idea space is also impermanent. All your thoughts, emotions, sensations, and perceptions are always changing from one moment to the next. And that leads to the idea of uncountability, which is another property of the idea space, which the book kind of details a little bit and is a fun little math exercise.
That's so insane. Yeah, actually, when you talked about I like that concept of perfect understanding, because that's how I feel about music all the time. When I'm listening to a song, there's lyrics that sometimes I'm like, wait, is this song written about me? Like, I feel like I'm so narcissistic, right? The song's about me. But I understand that. So are you saying that sometimes like that's like another concept of like an idea space, right, where something that's mapped out by someone else, it's an idea from someone else, is kind of translated into something that you are under, like something that you yourself are experiencing?
Yeah, so there's two different types of idea spaces. There's your personal idea space, which is yours, right? Like no one can see your thoughts, emotions, sensations, and perceptions, right? And then there's macro idea spaces, which occurs when idea spaces mix. Like right now our idea spaces are mixing. And so that occurs on a very large scale, right? And macro idea spaces are responsible for building the intersubjective realities of our world, right? Things that we believe that are real just because we think they're real. So, for example, words. When you think about words, they're only real because we have given meaning to them. If you go back like 10,000, 30,000 years, words didn't really exist the same way, right? English wasn't around. Same thing goes with money, same thing goes with companies, same thing goes with governments and large institutions. That doesn't mean they're not useful. Like, laws are great. I love laws, because laws, I don't have to, like, no one's going to kill each other, and that's fantastic. Right. We need that. But it's just this understanding that things, a lot of time we get a lot of stress from things that are directly related to those intersubjective realities, like our jobs or the money and everything. And those are important, but if you put all your value into that, you're putting value into something that's not 100% real. Whereas your body is real, right? Taking care of yourself is real. Being as healthy as you can, that's real. And so question for you. So do you have any songs where you listen to them and you're just like, this is me. Like this song is 100% me.
Yeah. I think that's actually kind of the basis of serotonin. It's like, you know, sometimes music is a little bit more relatable than some of the going to therapy. Or even just not saying that you shouldn't go to therapy, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes, like, the emotions that are described by an artist, by someone who is in that creative space, which I'd love to talk about a little bit more with you, relates to the emotions that the person who's feeling emotions, it's very relatable. So there's songs, like, for example, like, there's a lot of Drake songs that I listen to if I'm going through, like, a heartbreak, or if there's, like, a Kendrick Lamar song that I love listening to if I'm, you know, just really mad at the system, or, like, or, you know, just EDM music. And it doesn't even have to have song lyrics. Sometimes the music itself kind of captures exactly, like, the emotions I feel or the mood that I have during the day.
Yeah, and I think a beautiful thing about the idea space is that a lot of times we think that words can capture perfectly what we mean, but they just can't, right? There's so many things that we just cannot put into words, and they're just ineffable. And I think that's the beauty of music, right? Just because it can capture something no one else can. The emotions, like, emotions are so hard to put into words. When you say happy or angry, those are just kind of capture a part of an idea space, but it's not a perfect mapping, right? And that's why I think the koans are so important. And, like, a song is an example of a koan, right? Like, for me, Man on the Moon by Kid Cudi is just, that hits me in the feels like no one else. Exactly. That's my koan for me.
Yeah. No, and I like that. I liked learning about the koan through the mindfulness cards. Is there other, well, first off, let's kind of describe some of the mindfulness cards that you have. I know you've kind of, you, like you said, there's, like, quotes, pictures, illustrations that you've used to kind of describe the mindfulness, or sorry, that idea space. Do you have examples of those cards that you're right now? I have to go run.
Yeah, no, I got them actually.
Okay.
So I have the second product. So the first product is a quote and then a challenge on the day side, and then a quote and the reflection on the night side. And the quotes are really the koans, right? They're koans for me. And the thing is, what's a koan for one person might not be a koan for the other person. So you'll never win, but it's worth trying. And then the second one are just 100 daily meditations. And they have just different graphics of different exercises you can do based on categories. So you have Zen, right. You have idea space, you have emotions, you have life. And the whole goal is just to complement the book, right? So you have the idea space cards, which are a way to kind of get you in a headspace if you're not very familiar with mindfulness or meditation, and just kind of expose you to that world a little bit. And then the book is kind of the heart and soul of the brand, where it's just really understanding big picture where we are and where we fit in the universe at large, which I would love to talk to you about as well. And then on the website, theideaspace.io, there's more technical resources such as the white paper, which explain how the idea space is an exact solution to Einstein's field equation, right? And the whole goal is to build it at different levels, so that if you start with the cards and you want to learn more, you get to the book. You get to the book, you want to learn more, you get to go to the white paper, and then it's like Alice in Wonderland, right? You just jump into the rabbit hole.
Okay, yeah, Alice in Wonderland, because I'm sure, like, while you're writing this book and you're talking about perception, you're talking about navigating reality when some things may not even be real or it's just a perception. Has there been a moment while you're writing this book where you're like, is any of this really real? Like, is any of this real? Because I question myself that all the time. Like, what was that like for you when you're writing this book?
Yeah. Oh, devastating. It's just, like, scary. It's just a lot of unlearning, right? Yeah. And I think the best way to understand is by understanding what science is, right? Science isn't trying to prove things that are true. It's all about falsification, right? So, for example, you start off, you make the scientific method.
you make a hypothesis, you test it, and then you either fail to reject it or you reject it. At no point are you saying it's true. It's either not true or not enough information to say it's not true. So that's kind of what science is. Like, you look at it from anything from Newton to Einstein, where Newton's theory of gravity was the status quo for so long. But Einstein's theory of relativity just proved it wrong. Like, it's right. It's really good approximation. Like, one of the best approximations we'll ever have. But it was just wrong. And I think that'll hold true for Einstein's theory of relativity. It's right now, but then there's going to be an experiment that proves it wrong. And that doesn't mean, again, it's not useful and it's not a great approximation. But it's just the way science is, right? Scientific theories themselves are just, they're intersubjective realities, right? Whereas science itself, the idea of science, the idea of falsification, that is more real because you're not making a definitive statement, right? You're only proving things false.
Right. That's definitely an interesting way of like putting it and actually describing it. And okay, so yeah, so I've had some of these thoughts too when I think about what's like certain images that kind of describe what the meaning of life is. There's been two types of like illustrations in my head. One is life is like a pinball machine where you just kind of get shot into this sphere, and then you're just like getting bounced around different opportunities, whether it's like the little mini games and you see like all the lights ringing and stuff. And then at the end of the day, like the ball just falls down into the pit. Like, not at the end of the day, but I guess at the end of your life,
yep.
The ball falls down into the pit. And then if you believe in reincarnation, I guess there's another ball that gets shot into the pinball machine. What are some illustrations that I know you mentioned, like your position in the universe? What have been some of those like ideas or visions in your head that's kind of like helped you find your place in the universe?
Yeah. And love the pinball example. Yeah. I thought it's great. That was amazing. and for me, the meaning of life is life itself, which is a little esoteric, but it's just like the way it is. So the beautiful thing about physics is math gives us tools and ways to describe the world. And when you marry math with observations, you get physics. So a couple fun physics facts. So everything you see is in the past because it takes time for light to go from point A to point B because it travels at 186,000 miles per second. Mm. So the light that you're receiving from the moon right now takes 1.3 seconds to reach you. And by the time it reaches you, you're seeing how the moon was 1.3 seconds ago. So you're always seeing in the past. The sun is 8 minutes away. It takes 8 minutes for the light from the sun to reach you. So you're seeing how the sun was 8 minutes ago. And that holds true for the way that you're looking at your phone, the way that you see your parents in the other room, right? You're always seeing in the past. So your observable universe right now is a giant sphere centered on you where everything you see is in the past. So then the question becomes, if I keep looking back, what's going to be the edge of my observable universe? Well, two things. The first is you have this giant wall called the cosmic microwave background, which is the point in the universe when the universe went from being opaque to transparent. And if you go past the wall, there's more fun stuff that happens, and you get all the way up to the Big Bang. And so going back to this idea is that the observable universe is a giant sphere centered on you, and everyone lives at the center of their own observable universe. And at the center of their own observable universe lives their idea space of uncountable depth and zero measure, just hidden from the outside world.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's the life.
Okay. Wow. But yeah. Okay. So can you break down the last part of that for me a little bit? Just so 100%. You're saying like, when the observable universe is a mixture of what's happening in our past, our present, and then what we aim to do in the future.
It's all your observable universe is everything you see in your observable universe is in the past because it takes time for light to get. So a good example is, have you ever been on the beach during the sunset, and then as the sun is setting, the golden rays are reflecting right off the water towards you?
Mm-hmm.
But then, and if your friend is right next to you, those sun's golden rays are reflecting right towards him or her, right?
Yeah.
So that's because each of you are at the center of your own observable universe. So if you extract that thought process back and you just keep going farther and farther, since you're always seeing in the past, the edge of your observable universe right now is the Big Bang. It's the creation. So the Big Bang didn't just happen. It's still happening, which is kind of weird to think about. But the beauty of all of it is that the gravitational effects of the Big Bang are unique to you in the same way that the sun setting on the beach is unique to you. It hits you differently than it hits everybody else. And for me, it's just the idea that you kind of make your own living, right? You make your own world. Since everything you see is in the past, when you do an action, it takes time for it to reach someone else. So humans have the uncanny ability to mold space-time into the way they see fit, because space-time is malleable, right? Wow. When you move in a direction relative to a stationary observer, like if I move like this, I contract in this direction spatially. And when I contract in that direction spatially, my time slows down relative to yours. So everyone has their own proper time. And there's a lot there.
Wow. No, I mean, that's actually really interesting. And I'm liking how we're kind of delving deeper into some of the physics, and also just kind of seeing how that physics is applicable in real life. Cause like you said, I liked what you said about gravity, right? And, let me know if this resonates, but like, it's interesting how you mentioned gravity, and the effects of gravity are still weighing on us. And if we threw, I think in physics, I remember this example, but it's like, if you throw a ball at the edge of the universe, right, that ball curves rather than just goes straight. I think, let me know if my physics is right, but like, there's a curvature towards, in the earth and in gravity.
A good way to think about it is that gravity is not real. Gravity is the illusion of curvature of space time. Mm. So imagine you have a trampoline, right? And you put a bowling ball on the middle of that trampoline's going to dip, right? And if I put some marbles around that bowling ball, they're going to gravitate towards the bowling ball, right? Mm. So in this case, the trampoline is space time. The bowling ball is a planet, a star. And then marbles are the planets circling around the star, right? So gravity is just the illusion of the curvature of space-time. Or as a good physicist said, gravity is geometry.
Okay. Gotcha. And I think about that because, let's map gravity to something like deficit thinking, right? And positive psychology. That's so interesting because what we just described in gravity, it's kind of like in our mindset as well. There's always our natural tendency to think is deficit thinking, right? That we're losing something, that, you know, I think there's like a psychology study about like, if you lose $100, it's a lot more painful than gaining $100. And, you know, it's our minds are naturally geared towards deficit thinking and feeling and loss. But it's cool when we apply gravity in the concept of like positive psychology, because it's a lot harder, but a little bit more rewarding to stay afloat and put in positive thoughts to keep yourself flying, I guess. When I kind of imagine like the Flappy Bird example, right? Where you're getting tossed into the game and you're always falling down, but you have to keep pressing the button and keep putting positive thoughts on there to stay afloat and to navigate the obstacles.
Yeah, that was beautifully said. And I love the example you used. And that's from Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky for the loss and gain. That's a beautiful one.
Yeah.
And the Buddha has a really good quote on this, which is, whatever the mind frequently ponders becomes the inclination of the mind. Hmm. So if you're always thinking about kind of sad, like more sadder thoughts, that's kind of the momentum that's going to carry you. If you're thinking about more positive thoughts, that's the momentum that's going to carry you. And just having that awareness to know when you're in a rut, because it's really hard sometimes to see the spiraling of thoughts. It just happens, right? We're all human. I think that's kind of what you have to train yourself to catch yourself when you're thinking, and then iterate back to, okay, what was the thought that caused that, that caused that, that caused that, to like that root thought. And then you're like, I'm being silly. I'm just going to laugh at myself and kind of like move forward with life.
Wow. Yeah. And okay. So I like how you've been able to kind of continue to map cultural concepts and also like concepts from different types of spiritual and way spiritual. Like I know you said the through your cards, right? And through reading the book, like it seems like you've been able to connect some of the math and science concepts back into like large schools of thought, like Buddhism, Christianity, or whatever schools of thoughts there are in regards to mindfulness and wellness.
Yeah, and I think for me, the way I would describe it is that, so the idea space is the union between Zen and physics. And if you break that down further, physics is the baby of math and observations, kind of like we talked about earlier. And then Zen is a really interesting one because you have Buddhism, which started in India around 2600 years ago or something like that. And then it moved over to China, where it became Chan. I might be pronouncing it wrong, but it's like C-H apostrophe A-N. And then from China, it moved over to Japan when it became Zen. And so it's kind of like this idea that we talked about earlier around intersubjective realities and macro idea space, that they're always evolving and they're always impermanent, right? And the constant change of they're always changing, right? They're a constant flux. And the same holds true for these philosophical viewpoints of life, right? Buddhism evolved into Chan, which evolved into Zen, which is, in my mind, evolving into the idea space, but obviously I'm biased. And then it will continue to evolve, right? As the world then keeps spinning and the universe keeps doing its thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So where you see, I mean, having written this book, having kind of applied some of these big picture schools of thought of mindfulness and meditation into something so rooted into the way world works in physics and math, like, how do you see this space growing? How do you see like the universe evolving with all?
Yeah. For me, the goal with the idea space is to legitimize mindfulness and kind of how we view consciousness from a more scientific perspective. Mm-hmm. And luckily, a lot of mindfulness practices have been around for a very long time, right? So there's a good quote where some of the oldest questions have the oldest answers, right? And so just taking that knowledge and combining it with the modern science that we know, it's really powerful. And the goal is just to give people a way to look in without feeling the need to feel bad, right? And really making it more commonplace in our world. For instance, if we're able to have every meeting or every class or every kind of different thing that you do start with a 30-second pause where everyone just stops and just breathes together for 30 seconds, I will be content. That would be like, I would be so happy because then everyone kind of stops and just takes a moment to be grateful for where they are, what they have, and just stop and relax.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, the tagline of the idea space is, you know, a new metric for general relativity. What's the value that you see of like we said, like bringing reality into consciousness and making it seem a little bit more tangible? What's like the value that you see behind that?
Yeah, I think it gives it. Richard Feynman, he was a physicist. He had a beautiful way of describing physics, and it allows us to give a common layer of understanding. So then when we talk about something, we are all talking about the same thing. So for example, what is a chair, right? If you look at it from a certain distance away, it's a chair. But then if you zoom in, then you see atoms, it's made of atoms. But some of the atoms are paint, some of the atoms are chair. So how do you know what's chair, what's paint? And then some of the atoms are floating off. So like, what's a chair, right? So we just say, it's a chair. Everyone knows it's a chair. We're good calling it a chair, right? And I think we can move on and use chair in more useful ways. And I think the same thing will happen with the idea space where you describe the idea space and we all have an understanding of what it is. And we can use that to have therapy sessions, right? If you want to express yourself, you can express it in terms of the idea space. And it gives one layer of detachment from you and your thoughts, which is a big problem in mental health, at least for me, when I like get sad, because everybody gets sad, I think, like, it's always because of I. Like, it's like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not good enough. Yeah. And it's always I, this treacherous I. But what is I anyways, right? Like, if you do the same idea of the chair on yourself, if you zoom in, you see cells. If you zoom in more, you see molecules. If you zoom out, you see a dot. So, like, where do you start and where do you end? And I think one of the big realizations is that there is no I, right? What you call I is just an amalgamation of your thoughts, emotions, sensations, and perceptions at a particular point in time. And as I forget who said it, but it was I is like a swinging door that swings when you breathe in and you breathe out. So it's just, yeah.
Wow. And that's crazy. I think all of this is mind blowing to me. And like when I first came across this idea space, I was just, I saw the value in it in regards to illustrating some of these concepts that are so intangible from our mind into reality. And you've done that right through the mindfulness cards, through the mindful prompts. Where do you see, like, I know we talked a little bit about where you see like some of these concepts being played in real life. What do you hope to see this space grow into with what you're seeing, with just how you've done with what you've done so far with that idea space?
Yeah. You got a lot of great questions today.
I was like trapped in my own idea space while I was formulating that question to you.
I think spreading the cards to people in different markets that I think they would do well. So for example, spas, that's where we're going to target next. And it's kind of trying to make like a business around it for myself so that it's self-sustainable. I think one of the premises in Buddhism is that you want to have a job that's fulfilling. Right. And if I can make a job where it's promoting the idea space and kind of getting people to take a second look at themselves and just kind of taking a step back. And I think that would be really neat. but then I also would love to explore other ways to add value to the economy and the world and to other humans. So picking up coding again, learning more Python, more JavaScript, and just understanding how I can utilize that. And so every morning, I'm a bit of a nerd. I like to read textbooks in the morning. So whether it's physics, math, or whatever. So right now I'm reading on semiconductors. Yeah. I'm just trying to learn, right? Just learning as much as I can and trying to fill my idea space with all the goodies and hopefully putting them together in the future and making something good come out of it.
That's so cool. I think something that I really find interesting when I come across physics or even just things that we study like as general ed courses in college, right? Physics, econ, basic math, or even basic coding. It's nice seeing how some of those concepts you can pull out of it and you can apply it to your own mental health. Like, let's say like expansionary policies versus contraction policies in economics, right? Like, there are certain things that you can do to elevate your mood and how you're feeling in the day. And then there's things that you can do to retract and relax and let go a little bit so that you're also back to that, like you said, that baseline of zero or zen. Another question I had is just who's making all these illustrations? Are these all illustrations done by you? Are you working with a team? Who's behind the idea space?
Yeah, great question. So there's one comment on what you said about like how everything in the world seems to relate back to your kind of mental headspace. And Dave Chappelle quote, love Dave Chappelle. It's when you're learning the facts about life, they're all about you. And that hits. He's a smart cookie.
I definitely came across that quote before. I need to now check out his special again.
For the idea space, it started off with my pictures in PowerPoint, and I kind of knew I had this idea for the bubbles. And so I hit up a VFX artist, and I said, can you just make me floating bubbles? And he did, and he lives in Croatia. Okay. And then we were making the cards, and he's like, my girlfriend is an artist. And I was like, all right, let's hit her up and use her. So she made the first product, and she killed it, knocked it out of the park, made them so beautiful. And so we had the bubbles going and it was going great. And then for the second product, we had another designer in Turkey and he added the little guy and it just, the whole brand came together. You have a little dude who is just everybody. I feel like for me, when I see the little guy, I always see like a reflection of myself. And the goal is for everybody to see a reflection of themselves as well. And then you have the bubbles and it's interesting because the brand is so simple and basic.
Yeah.
You have bubbles, a little dude that looks like a stick figure, but then the concepts behind them are very deep. And so I think that's one of the key ways to make this accepted by a mass audience is just make it as simple as possible and as appeasing as possible in the eyes. That way a child can pick it up and say, you know what, I actually kind of understand this, right? That was kind of the goal with the book.
Yeah, that's something I'm also curious about, like who's kind of gotten to experience the idea space. And I mean, I know you've been in that creative headspace of like building out this vision and translating it into simple yet digestible concepts through quotes, through physics, whatever. But how have other people you've come across kind of responded to the idea space or understood it?
Yeah, fantastic question. So the first people were my parents. And they thought I was a little crazy at first because I was giving up my nice paying IBM job to write a book. And it didn't make any sense to them, especially some of the math was really deep. So that was interesting. But they got it at the end, which was nice. My brother as well, he read it a couple of times. And then I had a couple of friends read it and kind of provide feedback and give me back their thoughts, which was really nice. So I've been very thankful that one of my friend's uncle was a physicist at Villanova, and I just had so many conversations with him about kind of what physics, the current state of physics, and how this makes sense with kind of how the idea space fits in. And he was just been very generous with his time and just guiding me to the right thing. And I'm actually talking to more physicists on Friday at Lehigh University, which is where I'm right next to where I live, and just trying to. So, like, the conundrum is that I'm not a physicist, right? I'm an engineer by trade, and then I worked in tech. And so I think there's going to be a lot of people who are put off by that fact. And if I'm coming in and I'm saying I'm introducing a new metric to general relativity, it can come off a little pompous and arrogant, I guess, which I understand. But it's like, I don't know how else to describe it. You know, like, these are the words that I don't know how to describe what I'm saying. And these are the only words I can find.
No, I think that's so, that's, I mean, people like me, I get it. And it's probably because of the fact that I'm so, growing up, I was like a space nerd and I still am. Like, I love learning about space, watching rocket launches and being curious about the universe, nerding out. But I'm also really fascinated about like self-awareness and self-improvement and psychology. And that's kind of the, some of the stuff that I want to bring into this channel is how do we map out some of the physical phenomena to our mental phenomena. Have you, I know you said you're talking to physicists, are there other people in the industry like psychologists or wellness experts that have kind of come across your idea and how they reacted to it?
So I haven't reached out to too many people in that space yet, but my goal is, my marketing strategy is to get on as many podcasts as possible. So those are going to be physics mm-hmm. podcasts and then, kind of more spiritual mental wellness podcasts as well. So I haven't really had a chance to get too many of their opinions, but I'm excited for it. I think it'll be fun because, again, my goal is to make some of the topics more tangible to people and more credible so that we can have open conversations about them in a way that's not personal. And I think that'll be really good for humans long term to say, like, because I think people, like, when they hear an idea, they criticize the person behind the idea. Instead of detaching themselves, the person from the idea, like ideas just exist and the person is just the vehicle that delivers the idea. And it's trying to live in this sort of meritocracy where the best idea wins instead of whoever proposed the best idea. I think that would be a neat goal to have.
Wow. Yeah, you have no idea. I mean, I'm sure you do, but clearly that has so many applications to some of the stuff like diversity, equity, inclusion stuff that we're facing today. The whole mental health crisis, loneliness epidemic. It definitely has relevance and place in what's going on in today's society for sure.
Yeah,
I had question, one thing that I was curious about is, like, you've written a bunch of different types of mindfulness prompts and wellness practices. What's some of the things that you want to, like, are there certain mindfulness practices that you use regularly or some of your favorite mm-hmm. prompts or mindfulness practices that you use from the idea space?
Yes, great question. So a fun one is to remind yourself that everything you see is in the past, because then it makes you think, what is the present if everything you see is in the past? That's a good, like, thinking about that. Another one is the Headless Way. And the Headless Way was brought on by Douglas Harding. And in a way, it's an answer to the age-old koan, what is your original face before your parents were born? So again, what is your original face before your parents were born? And some of these koans, they don't have explicit answers that you can put into words. It's more of like an emotion or a mental state that you feel. And the Headless Way is, let's do another experiment. I want you to point at something and I want you to describe it to me.
Okay. And I can't tell you what it is.
No, pick whatever you want and describe. Like, I'm pointing at a coffee mug. It's
okay.
Blue and whatnot. So yeah, pick something and describe it to me.
Okay. So, what I'm holding is blue. It's made of steel.
All right. That's perfect. Now okay. Pick something else and describe it and compare it to the first object.
Okay. So the second thing that I'm holding, has three legs. It's flexible and I guess pretty similar in size to the first object, but it's a little bit more bendable and malleable.
Okay. And now I want you to take your finger and I want you to point it back at where others see your face. In your experience, what are you pointing to? Can you describe what you're pointing to? Is there anything else like it that you can use to describe it?
I have a twin sister. So
genius.
No, I understand what you said.
But I think, like, the whole point there is to show that you have a single field of vision, right? Like, you can't compare all of this to the same way that you can compare a mug to a book, right? That's kind of the idea of the Headless Way. It's where's your head? You can't see it. And it just gives you a weird mental space that really makes you appreciate life and in a more mindful way. And if people want to check it out, Sam Harris has an app, Waking Up, where he does a nice little overview of that with Richard Lang. He does it. And it's well worth the attempts. It's a good experiment.
That's awesome. Well, I'll definitely have to check it out. And yeah, I'm so happy that we had this conversation. I got to, like, learn a little bit more from you and also, you know, answer some of the questions that I've had looking through the mindfulness, looking through the idea space and some of the things that you offer on your website. If someone was a little bit more curious about the idea space, what you've written about it, what's the best way to kind of get started either learning more about it or applying it? What would you suggest to people?
Yeah, great question. So if you go on my website, you can sign up and you get a free idea space overview, which will just give you more detail on it. I plan on changing that to the first sample chapter. So hopefully that happens in the next couple months. Get the cards. And I would say start practicing. The thing about the idea space is it's a way of describing the mind. So if you want to learn more about the idea space, just study your own mind, right? Joseph Goldstein has a good saying. It's, if you want to understand the mind, sit down and study it. So whatever mindfulness technique works for you, whether it's just observing your breath, doing body scans, getting more esoteric into Zen, do whatever resonates with you and just study your own idea space. And I think that's the best way to get into it. The book that I'm writing is just a framework to describe it so that you can find it, right?
Yeah.
But once you find it, it's all yours and it's yours for life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have so many people kind of reaching out to me, being like, hey, like, these mindfulness cards are pretty cool. Like, where'd you get them? And I think people really like how it's also a conversation starter. For those of you who don't know, I actually used some of the mindfulness cards and had it displayed in a mixer that I hosted back in December. And it was cool. It was also a good conversation starter to get people to start identifying with each other's koan, and they're also a way of thinking and navigating the world or perceiving the world. So
yeah, and I appreciate you doing that. That was very kind of you, and great moderator. Yes, very great questions. It was cool to get to talk about the idea space. I feel like I don't get to do it much, so
oh wow,
it felt really nice. I appreciate it, man.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Serotonin. Thanks again so much for listening. Once again, my guest today was my friend Clement DeCropp. You can learn more about his work and the Idea Space at ideaspace.io. All the links will be provided in the description. Serotonin is recorded, edited, and produced by myself. And if you like the show, you can find the podcast online on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iTunes. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and please be sure to rate it and leave a comment to share what you enjoyed or how I should improve. And if you've already done that, thank you so much. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or a family member who you think would get something out of it. You can also follow the show updates on my Instagram or on my personal website, which is also linked. Until next time, this is Korean Thomas, and as always, thanks for tuning in.